You're listening to Clouser on Business. Thanks for coming back. I'm Clouser, your host. Today, we're continuing our topic of business transitions with Frank Dane of B2B CFO. Frank's been my guest twice before. The topic has just a lot of content, and we weren't able to get through everything. But today, our intentions is to show you as a business owner how to implement that plan and strategic plan that Frank's put together for you to transition out of your business. Hey, well, welcome back, Frank.
Well, thank you, Clouser. It's a pleasure to be back.
Yeah. So I've just, as I mentioned before, I've really got a heart for young people coming out of business school, getting into business. What kind of advice would you be given someone who maybe wants to get a business degree in accounting, marketing, finance? What instructions would you give them?
Well, first I'd say that it's a great idea. There's much opportunity in the business world, and you can get involved at so many different levels that you can find something that you're passionate about, whether it's accounting, whether it's marketing, whether it's human resources. It all ties into business. It's all available out there waiting for young, vibrant, enthusiastic people to just jump in and build companies. Or if you want to take a job with a large company and you can be an employee. From my viewpoint, though, I like building the business. It's very exciting. So I recommend to young people to get the degree. It doesn't have to be in accounting. If you're more of a marketer, then get it in marketing. But make sure you take the accounting classes that let you understand the language of business, which is accounting. It's the debits and the credits. You need to understand those because no matter what aspect you're in, if you're building a business, trying to operate a business, a team member, you're going to have to understand the financial statements because the financial statements paint the picture. And as they say, to be trite, a picture is worth 1,000 words. Well, you take those financials and someone who understands them can derive a great deal of meaning from them, whereas someone who doesn't understand them is just... Yeah, they're trying to read Greek.
Yeah, exactly.
So my advice would be to, yes, go into business. I prefer building businesses and working with smaller, mid-sized businesses than working with the billion-dollar businesses. I think it's more fun. It's more exciting. You get to make a bigger imprint yourself. And again, find your passion, whether it's marketing, accounting, whatever it is, but make sure that you understand the other subjects that flow into the business. Be well-rounded, I guess, is my advice.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, how did you determine accounting was your initial road?
Great question. And it means I have to go back and think back for many years. I took an introductory accounting course, and I guess this is what got me, and I loved it. I mentioned it was like a new language. And I was never very good in languages, but I was good at the accounting. I understood the debits and credits. The financial statements made sense to me. It just was all very intuitive. And that's what got me going down that road in accounting.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned in our conversation we've had one day, business transition can be simple. It might be complicated. And you were telling me a story about how something about you acquired a company out of country, offshore, or maybe in Canada.
It was from London, England.
Can you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah,
I thought that was intriguing.
Sure. Well, we were acquiring a company, and again, it was very very helpful for me going back and reviewing what we did there and how we did it, because I was on the other side of the desk rather than trying to sell the company. We were buying it, and that gave me a lot of insight into the whole process, which I can apply now when I'm trying to help people sell their companies. What happened, which was very interesting, is that we were doing our due diligence, and we discovered a few contracts that committed the company to certain things that we did not want to do. We knew it would be expensive to do, and because of that, we were able to slice about $1 million off the negotiated price. And my point here is that when you're planning to exit, which you should be doing early, you have to look at not only what a contract or an activity or an action is going to mean today, what's it going to mean tomorrow in terms of your growth, in terms of when you finally decide to exit. So the point is to always be looking at the future as well as the present.
Very good. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
So today we want to talk about how we're going to implement the plan that you've been able to create for your client. You may just want to recap at the 35,000 level what the steps are up to this point and then delve into the specifics on implementing it.
Great. Be glad to do that. So we're talking about business transition planning, and I guess the question is, what is that? Very simply, it's the process of preparing for the day the business owner steps down from his or her leadership role. Doesn't mean that they leave the company completely, although many times it does. It really means that they're no longer the king or queen of the operation, is what it means. And that can be done in a number of ways. It can be a transfer to family members, management can buy them out, could be an employee buyout, an initial public offering, or just simply a sale of the business. Now, the reasons you want to do transition planning, the basic reason is that you want to make sure that you're going to get the highest value for the company no matter how you transition out. And the next step or so in the reasoning is, how do you value and market the company? And there's a number of ways to do that, which we covered in a prior podcast. But basically, you take an EBITDA approach, which is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So you're taking your accrual-based net income and turning it into a pre-tax cash-based earnings, and then looking at the risk, the prospects for growth in the EBITDA, the degree of manager ownership, and activity. And really, it's the activity that makes the big difference. The less active, the less important the owner is to the business, the higher the price is going to be. And then, of course, your value and marketability is going to be affected by supply and demand. And you can know from just basic economics, the more the supply, lower the price. Sorry.
Exactly.
Lower the price. So there's five basic steps in the transition planning. You identify the goals, you assemble a team of advisors, explore options, design the plan, and then we finalize and implement the plan. And we went through four of those, and we left off at the design the plan phase. So if it's okay,
yeah,
I'll get into that right now.
Yeah, let's pick it up from there.
Great.
And remind me who's on that team at this point.
Oh, yes, of course. One of the things we do in the preparation is assembling a team that's going to help with the transition, and that would include an attorney, a tax specialist, which might be a CPA, and depending on the size of the company, you'd either have an M&A company, merger and acquisition, or an investment banker, or at the lower end, a business broker. You also want a financial planner, a business advisor, an insurance advisor, and then you might have key employees, there might be family members involved, and then there would be a team manager, which is the position that I would take on the team. And the goal of all that is to keep the owner in the business, not being distracted by due diligence and all the things that have to be done in order to make the transaction happen. So we keep the owner in the business so we can keep working on the sales, make sure that the price is going to stay up at this critical point when we're negotiating a sale. Does that cover the team for you?
Yeah, sure does. So you've got this plan now. So how are you going to, what are you going to do with it?
We're going to design the plan, and that, of course, depends and varies based upon the type of transaction you're planning. And we discussed those previously. But one of the things that you need typically is a buy-sell agreement. And what the buy-sell agreement is, that's a contract between owners, stockholders perhaps, that governs what happens if an owner dies, becomes disabled, or otherwise leaves the business. And that agreement would dictate what triggers a buyout, who can purchase ownership shares, the valuation method for pricing the shares. And that can often be funded by life and disability insurance. And let me give you an example why you might need something like that. You might have, let's say you have two partners and they haven't kept their documents current. So they are great. They did a buy-sell agreement 15 years ago and they said, okay, here's the value of the company. If I die, you get this. Well, the value of the company 10, 15 years later can be very different. And that's why they have to review these continually. Let's say one of the partners die and now the value of the company back then was, you know, $50,000 for his share. Now it's really $250,000. Well, what does the spouse of the partner that died get? they get the $50,000. So you have to protect yourself, especially if you're a partner, for making sure that the price is changed as it grows, and you're reviewing these documents every year. So that type of agreement, well, we already said what it would dictate. So let me go to another step or another document that you need. You might have, and again, these documents depend on what type of transaction you're doing, but a trust document for any shares that would be placed in trust, and this is often required as part of your estate planning, so when the business is anticipated to go to the next generation. You can also do what they call an ESOP plan document, which should be has to be submitted to the IRS to make sure that it qualifies. And there's numerous companies that can help you structure your employee stock option plan. And you will need help to do that. And then you can also do an employee stock option agreement. And the way the stock option agreements work, what you're doing with that is you're actually transferring ownership to your employees on an ongoing basis. And depending on, you would have an option grant approved by the board, if there is a board, otherwise by the owner, and it would set the price of the option, and the employees, as time passes, the option would vest a certain amount. You might grant them $100,000 when you hire them, but they can't have them all at once because they'll take them and leave. So you give them to them maybe over 3, 4, 5 years on a amortized basis, if you will. So that's how you would work a stock option agreement. And then, of course, if it's an immediate or an outright sale, you need a purchase agreement. And finally, no matter what the transaction, you should have an executive summary, which is going to summarize the components of the plan so you can explain it to the stakeholders. You can explain it to your spouse. You can explain it to your son or your daughter who's going to take over the business so they know where the business is going, especially if you're anticipating they're going to take it over. So those are the five or so steps. Actually, there's more than five steps in designing the plan. And it takes us. Do you have any questions on that before I go into the implementation?
Well, I'm just curious what type of housekeeping duties you have when you come in to a client to get all this information. Because I've been in business long mm-hmm. enough to know that things aren't always where we think they are or even yes. have them.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. We actually call that pre-due diligence. So we want to get ready for the due diligence before it happens. Before we even have somebody who wants to buy it, we will set up a data room, and that can be either electronically or hard copy or both. Some people want both. And when we know that we're going to get involved in this type of transaction, we start gathering those documents right away, getting them in the data room. And the big advantage to that is when we find a buyer and they say, give us this, we want to see that, all we have to do is go to the data room. And it's there, and we have it. So we're not running around like chickens with our heads cut off. We're ready for anybody, and that makes a great impression on the potential buyer, and it gives them more confidence that the business people knew what they were doing. They knew how to get prepared for this, so they probably knew how to run the business as well. So, yes, having that the data is typically scattered, and that's one of the first things we do is bring it together in the library.
For certain. This has really been, over the course of the three podcasts we've done, this has really been an interesting time with you. I'd like to have you come back and maybe share some more things at a future date, because I'm sure some of our listeners are going to have questions for you and some other insights. But how do they find Frank Dane and B2B CFO?
Well, first, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it, and I hope it is valuable to your listeners. You can reach me at frankdane@b2bcfo.com, or you can reach me on my phone, which is 503-303-5845.
Yeah. And also, just a reminder, we'll have a link on our website, clauseronbusiness.com, where you can get the book, The Exit Strategy Handbook, for free by visiting there. And hope you have some questions. I hope this topic's been helpful to a lot of people, because I know that people are various stages in their business, want to may be new and plan accordingly now, or might be wanting to do something else, and the steps here and the information here has helped you. But I'm out of time. Thanks for listening again. You've been listening to Clauser on Business.